That's Chuck Gerrard and Love Song. Their song from, well, ages ago. Front Seat, Back Seat is what it was. Front Seat, Back Seat. Yeah, Jim let things get out of control there, didn't he? That's all right. We're under control again here.
We're all set here. Okay.
I think we are anyway. It is 11 minutes after the hour, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark, a member of the board of Creation Moments, and our the only surviving biochemist we have on staff here at Broken Road Radio. And Don comes to us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, happy Tuesday. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Dave.
Good morning,
Don. Hope all is well up there.
Oh, happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Happy birthday this week. It slipped by. What, 43 this year?
43, yeah, right.
What is it? Well, like
39. We don't get past 39.
Okay, we never get past 39.
A little older than that. I am now eligible for Medicaid.
You finally reached that magic time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
There was a story the other night about, us folks over 65, and we're making up something like 30 to 40% of the population, and only 20% of those eligible to drive have gotten a moving violation in the last 5 years.
Ooh.
We're still driving, we're safer drivers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's because we watch out for everybody else.
and we're just too slow. And we can't hear when people are screaming at us. So we pull over to the side and say, "Eh?"
No, you're talking to me. You're talking to me. Yeah.
What? Yeah. You're talking to me?
Yeah. Speaking of aged things, there's an article over at ICR.org, Institute of Creation Research, that really caught my attention this week, because Stonehenge, I used to have that as my wallpaper on my computer. A very dramatic, strange lighted version of Stonehenge, those ancient upright rocks sitting on top of the ground in a circle someplace in England. Well, turns out some new things are being discovered about Stonehenge, and it's not like it just got there. It's been around a long time, but one of the tricks of the trade these days in, what would you call it, archaeology, is ground truthing radar, where they can run a radar over the surface of the ground and find out what's below, and they've been doing that at Stonehenge. Don, what are they discovering there?
Well, as you said, they are using ground-penetrating radar to look under the earth right around Stonehenge, and what they're finding are more stones basically arranged in a circular pattern. So the structure apparently continues underground. It doesn't look like there's, underground caves or other structures other than the stones that they're finding. So this, what we see on the surface is only a part of what actually was there originally.
It's only the tip of the Stonehenge.
So it's quite interesting, and I guess the other interesting thing about this article is the history of the Brits that they brought out, and in the article, in essence, refuting the supposed age of Stonehenge that the secular world has given it. Mm-hmm. They've given it an age range between 6,000 to 2,500 BC.
Which is a pretty widespread, suggesting we don't know a whole lot about it.
Well, they don't know a whole lot about it, and the secular archaeologist, for whatever reason, is completely ignoring the history of the Brits and where they came from and how long ago they were there, and
this is a written history that we've known about for some time, apparently called the Chronicle of the Early Britons. I had never heard of this documentation.
Well, I hadn't either, but there are there is a lot of information, and apparently this chronicle goes all the way back to Japheth, one of the sons of Noah.
My goodness.
And we now know from a lot of study and a lot of history and a lot of where people wound up that the sons of Noah dispersed to different parts of the earth, obviously after the flood. And the Japhethites went north, and so they populated not only Russia, but one of the sons of Japheth populated Magog, for example, populated the Russian area. But we had others that populated Western Europe. And in particular, of course, there was also those that populated Britain. And so Britain actually got its name from a fellow called Brutus. And he, you know, then the kings of that area, you know, this this particular chronicle really is quite astounding because it tells about the Great Ring and what the purpose of the Great Ring was for, and apparently they were trying to. This is a the Stonehenge one is apparently a kind of a mock-up, if you will, of other rings that must be out there in other places because the Ambrosius wanted to kind of beautify his area, so to speak. And so he lived, he was near an area called Kilara, which is now called, we can match up that name with a name that's actually on the books today, which is Kildare. So it's in obviously Wales. And so it's just an amazing story about the rings, but this was like, hey, what can we do? It's almost like what can we do architecturally to kind of beautify this space that we got here? And so they decided to build this this ring because it had they thought it had great healing powers. So people that were brought to the center of the ring were thought you know, to be healed. So we, in this story, you actually run across not only Ambrosius, but he had a royal advisor called Merlin.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we we know about Merlin, but he was Merlin became famous because he devised a plan for bringing these great stones to that area without using a whole lot of you know, muscle power, apparently. And so whether he had some type of mechanical device that he devised to transport these stones, but these stones apparently came from quite a distance away, and some actually even speculate that they came from Africa.
Of course, that's been known for some time that the stones are not native to that location, that they had been moved there from someplace else. And so the Chronicles of Britain is starting to back up some of the suspicions of archaeologists to verify what they thought.
Yes, and yeah, so that is a... it's just a really a fascinating story all around. But there is also the it's kind of like this little town, which is now called Kildare, used to be Childara, which is very near the word Kildara, which was the original name of that area. So these, but the whole kind of thing, they also think that, well, maybe there were also some giants that came to that part of the land, and they were used to help construct this the Stonehenge as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are legends, not legends, but there's references, for example, to dragons. So the
you know, I'm trying to decide if the chronicle of this Chronicle of the Britons is fiction or history, and it's starting to sound like it was written as history. But when you hear it mention names like Merlin and King Arthur, you know, Ambrosius was I think King Arthur's father or grandfather. And King Arthur, I've read, we don't even know that he was an historical figure, whether he's a fictional or fact. Although I guess the camps are divided on that score. So this may be a case of, even if this is fiction, because of the time it was written, referring to things that we can see today, we can correlate the two, and fiction becomes history if, in fact, this was fiction to begin with. I mean, it's verifying some things, except for the age of Stonehenge, which turns out to be, if you're to believe the Chronicles of Britain, much younger than anybody suspected.
Well, much younger, and indeed, instead of being in the, 2500 BC or earlier, they think now, because of the leaders, the kings that were around at that time, that it's places the age of the construction of Stonehenge around 504
AD. AD, common era, yeah.
So a lot earlier than what the secular folks are saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it, apparently they're also finding other rings in other areas. One of the rings that they found, let's see, I just had it. Oh, where was it? Anyway, well, I'll find it and then we'll get back to it. But Stonehenge is not the only one. Apparently, by doing this this underground radar type of testing, they're finding other areas that have a circular pattern of stones, much like Stonehenge.
Now, but generally in that area, right? Because I'm reading this, it says 17 distinct underground stone structures spread across an area equaling 1,250 soccer fields.
Oh, yes.
So they're similar stone structures hidden underground and apparently rocks horizontal then laid down. I can't tell from this article how those are positioned, what the radar is actually churning up. But even the Stonehenge itself seems to be surrounded by an underground complex of rocks that were laid in a particular pattern.
Yeah, well, not only a particular pattern, they were laid in circles. So there's apparently a bunch of circles underground. And why there's dirt on top of the, of that only maybe because of erosion or other types of, wave action or something that might have buried that area.
Or it could be they were intentionally buried too, for all we know.
Yeah, they could have been.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to see, and maybe the original article might have that, what it looks like, from, let's say, space or at least from above, all the circles, because that's a tremendous area, 2,500 plus, soccer fields. It's a tremendous area of ground that these circular structures cover.
And even aside from Stonehenge itself, this seems to point up how tentative sometimes or how much simply guesswork is dating ancient artifacts. You can never be sure. I mean, the so-called scientific methods we have for dating them are not all that reliable, are they?
Well, they're not, and in this case, they kind of guessed at an age based on an evolutionary, thinking about when people might have moved or what type of people might have moved in the area, and if you ignore, the main point here is if you ignore the Bible, for one, and we have good evidence that the flood happened about 4,400 years ago. If you ignore that information, then anything that you might come up with for the movement of man, for example, across the face of the earth, gets skewed, and it's typically skewed a lot older than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about some of this in the past with regard to languages that have been dispersed, throughout the world. Obviously, languages were dispersed because you know, from a biblical record, you know that we had that there was the Tower of Babel, and God confused the languages of the peoples, and then of course the peoples dispersed after that. And that so all of this has to be after the Tower of Babel, because you know people were dispersing. The whole purpose, God reinforced with Noah that man was supposed to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The same commandment that he gave, the same command, if you will, that he gave Adam and Eve. He said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Well, man in his sinful nature rebelled against that and started building a great city and indeed a great tower. And the people weren't dispersing. So God comes down and confuses their languages, and now they are forced, if you will, in a very gentle way, I might say, because he doesn't force them, you know, with by using cherubims or something to, you know, fight them off. He's he just confuses their language, and that requires them or causes them to disperse because they no longer can work together.
Now, you can kind of date the Tower of Babel by looking at the ages of Noah and his sons there. And so didn't that happen about 100 years after the flood? It was like within a century.
Well, when we looked at, yes, when we looked at this before, it was about 100 years after the flood that one can say that the people started dispersing after the Tower of Babel. I mean, and Babel was not that far from, you know, from apparently where the ark landed, wound up on the mountains of Ararat. It doesn't give us exact location as to where that is, but there were three cities and kind of a triangle, and the Tower of Babel was right in the middle of it. So it you know, was possibly used as a kind of a religious type of thing, and it certainly, you know, the people were trying to prove themselves that, hey, you know, we can build this tower up to heaven. So,
Well, it's interesting. I'm kind of looking at the history of the Chronicles of the Early Britons here too, and it looks like it was written as history, originally back about the 12th century. And it named the kings of Britain going back, as you say, all the way to Japheth. And there have been archaeologists who have tried to write about the history contained in that and have been unsuccessful in getting their work published. It's like there's this conspiracy against the information. Maybe it was, it's thought of by most of the world as fiction, but there is a substantial school of thought that says the Chronicle of the Early Britons is history. So the world of thinkers is divided on that score, but it lends a fascinating aspect to the whole idea that Stonehenge may well have been built in the 5th century, 6th century now, A.D., about 504 A.D., and this article we can link to the podcast, so you'll see the article itself once you go to the podcast on brokenroadradio.com a little later this morning. Just go up to our podcast tab and go to Don Clark's name, and you'll find it as the top podcast there. And there'll be a link there to the article on Stonehenge. It's over at the Institute of Creation Research, ICR.org.
I'm looking at some other pictures that were online from the National Ground Penetrating Radar Service. And, you know, apparently they did that, but they've got a drawing, and the ground penetrating radar, they put together pictures, underground pictures of something like 17 monuments in that same area. And, you know, it's a kind of it almost looks like a rocket ship without the nose cone. And it's heading off to the, that would be northeast. And, you know, and all the monuments, the 17 monuments are within it. And then there's a series of monuments that form this kind of outside shape. I mean, it's very strange.
That'd be interesting. Why don't you send me that link, David, and I'll link to it also in the podcast.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. There's a whole series of pictures that go through, you know, the other monuments that they found in that area. So it's... You know, it's this Stonehenge is just the one that's popped up on, you know, the top of the surface.
That'd be a place on my bucket list. I want to go to Stonehenge. Never done that. Been to England, but didn't make it there. And what a trip that would be, just to wonder and cogitate over what all that was about.
Yeah. Was it true that it seemed like there was conversation about building a roadway that would bring you closer to Stonehenge, but keep foot traffic away from the rocks themselves? It seems like that's
the site is carefully preserved. It's highly thought of. It's a tourist destination to be sure out there. And there have been a lot of researchers. I know there have been. Goods, things like jewelry and perhaps primitive weapons that were found there that were actually traded for with the European continent. So whenever that was inhabited, that area was inhabited, there were people traveling back and forth, moving goods back and forth with Europe. So that should be some sort of an indicator of the age, too. But it seems like so much is undecided about Stonehenge. This article is kind of a bright light on that. And so are the Chronicles of the Early Britons. I'd like to learn more about that.
Now there's another 3D drawing of the visualization of the long barrel, B-A-R-R-O-W, and it looks like the entryway to something the Chamber of Commerce might have put up. It has a roadway leading up to the front doors, and this supposedly is what the ground penetrating radar has discovered that was underground. Okay. Now these structures that they've drawn are in wood, so the wood is gone. I mean, the wood is long since decayed, but there's a stone foundation underneath that suggests that this was the front of this great big huge giant sized some sort of a massive temple, some sort of a massive religious site, manufacturing site. Nobody really knows exactly what it is.
If it was wood, it would suggest that it was originally above ground, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Those post hole structures are what I'd saw or what I had seen drawn. Okay. And the it kind of looks like the ancient longhouses that Native Americans had been supposedly had built in the in the Canadian area, northeast United States. I mean, we imagine that all Indians lived in teepees. Well, no, they didn't. They lived in collective houses where entire tribes would live in under one roof.
A little hard to talk about on the radio, but we'll link to this so you can actually go see the pictures yourself if you want to check out the podcast from Dr. Don a little bit later this morning here. Again, if you're listening on Live 365, you'd have to come to our website to find that link at brokenroadradio.com. You can also listen there, And you can also fire off your comments to us on the little chat window there. You can say hi, and you can request music, and you can comment on what news Don has brought us about Stonehenge. Maybe you've got more information to contribute to the discussion. We'd be responsive to that. We would love to hear your thoughts in that chat window. Don, anything else on Stonehenge we need to know today?
Well, I did want to mention a couple of things. Mm-hmm. One, the dating of Stonehenge is kind of dependent on when the Romans occupied, Britain and occupied that area, because it's got to be after the Romans have left, because the Romans went around any structures that the Brits had made while they were there. They, put their change the name of whether it was a temple, whether it was a church or whatever it was, and made it into a Roman temple, for example, and you put their insignias on the structures. It's interesting that Stonehenge has none of that.
That should be a very strong clue, I would think. That is a more recent origin. Yeah,
you would think that. Okay, hey, this had to be after the Romans were there. Well, the Romans left. Apparently at around 410 AD. That, again, supports a time after that. And, of course, 504 AD is after that period. The other thing I wanted to point out is in the references that is in this ICR article, you can get a copy of the chronicles of the early Brits, Britons. They give the URL for the address where the translation of that was done in 2002. And they're posting it in their references. So
there's quite a bit of other information on the internet about the Chronicles as well. So you can even just Google the name, the Chronicles of the Early Britons, and you'll find lots of links if you care to follow up on some of this. So, Don, as always, learned something from you. That's one of the reasons we love having you along on Tuesday mornings. Especially David learns stuff, doesn't he, David?
Well, yes, he does, and David loves to learn stuff.
He does indeed.
Well, interesting. Very interesting. Good. It's interesting that a lot of these things, if you look hard enough and long enough and careful enough, you know, it points back to the flood. It points back to the dispersion, of the peoples at Babel and. Anything that has to do with the civilizations, you can point back there. And as we've kind of discussed, the Japhites went north, the Hamites went to Africa, and of course, southern part of Asia, and of course the Shemites, kind of stayed in the Middle Eastern area, and so. As we look at, these things in archaeology and in early man, I think if we keep that in mind, where people actually migrated to, we can learn a lot and we can save ourselves maybe a lot of time in trying to figure out, hey, what is all of this about? Yeah. When the Bible gives us at least some clues, at least some starting points as to unraveling kind of the mysteries of our ancient past.
So there's so many unanswered questions, especially within the realm of archaeology, which is part science and part art too, I'm convinced. And when you look at what the Bible says and you treat it as history, it's amazing how many of those unanswered questions tend to get answered. It seems to be a really firm foundation for the rest of the history, well, at least of Western civilization. I don't know so much about Asia, but it has a lot to say about who we are and why we're here and what we have yet to do. Dr. Don, thanks so much. Dr. Don, again, with Creation Moments. You can link to them from our website at BrokenRoadRadio.com. The website is CreationMoments.com, and you'll find a wealth of resources there for really backing up the science that pertains to young earth creationism. And you'll be amazed at some of the things that, just from a pure scientific standpoint, argue strongly for a young earth creation. Don, take care. Have a great week, okay?
Okay, you folks too, and hopefully you're not completely freezing. But,
no, we love it.
You probably got another cold wave going through there now.
We love it when that happens. That's why we're here,
So, yeah. We are the chosen frozen few.
Don,
well,
take care.
You can migrate south eventually, and then.
I kind of suspect eventually that's going to happen. Yeah. Take care.
I bring it up every year.
All right, folks. You take care.